Senior Focus. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, and I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. And our guest today is the Honourable Tracy Martin, who was the Minister for Seniors in 2017 through to 2020, and I'm sure many of you actually will remember her, particularly for the Better Later Life strategy that she was responsible for producing, which highlighted how social connectedness and loneliness is the key to ageing well. So welcome, Tracy.
Kia ora. Lovely to speak with you.
Yes, kia ora, kia koe. And it's very timely, I think, to be talking. Firstly, as part of my introduction, I need to point out that you are responsible for, in your role as CE of the Aged Care Association, you're responsible for the welfare and well-being of the seniors in residential care from the point of view of advocating on their behalf, and that's 95% of the sector, but it's not the, you're not representing the retirement villages, so I have to make that very clear to everyone. And I understand you're now living in the Wairarapa in a 100-year-old villa.
Yes. We moved there in 2018, actually. My husband is a winemaker by trade, and my daughter has just completed her degree in viticulture and wine science, so she's entering the winemaking industry as well. So I'm pretty well set up when it comes to a good Pinot Noir at night time, Anne-Marie.
I'm sure you are. It's a marvellous part of the country, the Wairarapa. Mm-hmm. It is. It's really enjoyable. I used to live in Wellington for about 24 years, so I was very familiar with it. Yes.
Correct.
Now, the key thing, I think, for you in your role is that you already had a good overview of what was happening for seniors. You were a very well-organised and very well-informed minister. So you've come into your role now and looking at the assessment of aged care, which is a narrower focus than you had as a minister. What was your take on where the sector was at when you arrived in your role?
So you're right. About 7 months ago, I actually took the position of CE at the Aged Care Association. And when I was the Minister for Seniors doing the Better Later Life strategy, I had managed to pull together a multi-ministerial task force that included the Minister of Social Development and the Minister of Housing and so on, because I could see that, well, the wave of older New Zealanders that we were going to experience was going to have multiple things that they needed to be provided for them. Mm. One of those things is residential care. Mm. And about 28% of those of us who find ourselves over the age of 85 will need some form of residential care. And what I discovered when I took the role is that actually successive governments have completely ignored what was the obvious, that a number of reports had pointed out to government, which is that we have an ageing population. 28% of them will need some form of residential care, which means we need to invest in the sustainability of it, the growth of the amount that can be, of the number of people that can be looked after, and we need to support small communities like Wairoa and Reefton and any other small community in New Zealand to be able to keep their loved ones close to them as they go towards the end of their life. So I found that not much had changed and that I needed to get quite vocal and quite aggressive about trying to raise the profile of those issues and get some solutions.
Right. That's a very good summary, and it puts us off to a good start. I guess one of the things that one might do in such a situation is look elsewhere to see what was going on in other countries. Mm-hmm. And in particular, since Australia is grappling with these issues and they were reviewing the situation, I guess it was timely to look at what they were doing.
Absolutely. So Australia, their situation had gotten quite substantially worse than ours. Although we recently had my counterpart from Australia here for a number of days talking to politicians and talking to members of the care sector, and he observed in the time he was here that we are on the same trajectory. They ended up having a Royal Commission of Inquiry because the number of seniors, Australian seniors, that were having really bad experiences from the residential care facilities in Australia got to the point where they needed to have a Royal Commission of Inquiry. We do not want to get there. So in New Zealand, we just do not want to let this slide to the point where we have a large number of seniors that are not getting the level of care or well-being that they should get, and we need to have a Royal Commission. So we're very interested in the ministerial task force that their minister, Annika Wells, put together, that included all of the sector to design what is the best delivery model, both in-home, both in residential care, and also covering palliative care, because one thing we know, Anne-Marie, is all of us are going to die.
Indeed. And many of us actually don't look at this issue until we have to care or arrange care for our own parents as they face these issues. And it's that is the wake-up call time. But many of us, talking of my own generation here, 60s and 70s, we are having to look at these issues now.
Well, it's smart to do so on a couple of reasons. So, like my husband, I'm 60 this year, and so my husband and I have started to have a think about, well, how do we future-proof our house? So how do we want to live at home, like most people want to live in our own home, if we have one, for as long as we possibly can. So how can we future-proof it? So we're starting to think about, well, where would we put a ramp? Do we need to change the shower? And to make it more accessible if one of us needed an assistant to come and help us with showering. So those are conversations we could all be having with our partners and with ourselves. But one of the statistics that's really interesting is within the next 12 years, 660,000 senior New Zealanders will be renters. So many, many more of us will not own our own home. And let's have a think about what that looks like then from a how do they pay market rent perspective. What does that do from an accommodation supplement perspective? What does that mean when we're talking about isolation, loneliness, all of that sort of thing? Because a growing number of our seniors don't have families here, or are single individuals that don't have families at all. So there's quite a lot of pieces of this puzzle that we need to be collectively discussing and designing for what is that reality, which is not very far away.
Indeed. And while there are some very good products on the market, and there are better non-slip surfaces, there are lighter weight products so that prefabrication can take place, transportation of the dwelling can happen in a flash, and you can be up and running with a granny flat on site that's very livable. It's got all these advantages. And that's, I think, one of the areas that we see a little bit of light in the tunnel in the way that the legislation is for housing has change. Some of it's negative, but this part where granny flats may be permitted, I think, is actually going in the right direction.
Just one little thing there, though. I would have to say this about, I don't like the term granny flat, to be perfectly frank.
No.
The legislation is permitting for a non-consented dwelling up to 60 square metres. But that dwelling doesn't include sewerage. It doesn't include cooking facilities. It's something that you can live in, but you can't have all of those other amenities in them. You have to get those things consented, right? For stuff to actually go into sewerage and that. But also, so that's one thing. You can't put Granny down the back of the garden if she doesn't have the facilities that are appropriate for her to be there. The second thing is, though, one in four of us are going to have cognitive decline, dementia or Alzheimer's. So that's not appropriate either. We need residential care services to be part of the bigger picture, because it is an enormous weight on families when they have a loved one who is starting down the pathway of dementia. We need greater education and greater in-community support, but we also need to make sure that when those families need respite or when that individual needs some stronger residential care for their own safety, that it is available to them.
Yes, the respite care element is probably the most critical, because many people in the first instance will rely on family, and family will want to do well by them. And often it's in wanting to do well. They don't look after their own self-care as they need to.
No, that is so true. And so what we really should be designing is not, at the moment we've got a respite care system, which is pretty much if the care partner is about to break, we will probably provide some respite. We need to be looking at a revolving respite program that is appropriately funded. Now, that might be that somebody regularly comes into the home, the private home, and releases the care partner to go out and do shopping or do something for themselves. However, part of the reality of what families are dealing with is you don't actually get a decent night's sleep when you are worried about your loved one consistently. So, and let's say there was a family event in Australia and you're not able to take your partner with dementia or Alzheimer's with you, but you really want to attend that family event. So by making sure that we have a revolving respite opportunity, the person with dementia can get to know a residential care facility. They can become comfortable with it. They know the people in it and they are known to the people in it. And that also gives the care partner a level of sort of personal confidence that if they wish to go to a family event and they can't take their partner with them, that they have a place that they are cared for and looked after and known, to keep them safe and well.
Yeah, that is the ultimate and the real essential backup service that's really needed, yes. Now, I'm just thinking also, with what you've been party to at attending conferences and listening to people from other parts of the world, have you got a best practice model in your head since you've come up with describing this process of what's needed so well? I mean, do you see that happening already in places in Australia?
There are facilities here in New Zealand, and I've taken the Health Select Committee, who are currently doing an inquiry into the sustainability of the funding and delivery model for those with cognitive decline. So there are some pretty amazing people in this country delivering aged residential care. And at our recent conference that we had in Auckland, I asked my comms lady to go around and ask people, why do you do this? Why have you decided that this is the business for you? Or why are you a nurse in aged residential care? And it came out again and again and again. It was that they loved the families and the residents. They felt proud and responsible for delivering care to them, the residents that they had towards the end of their lives. It was a passion for them. I asked my team to find out why they decided to do this, because under the funding model, Anne-Marie, these people are losing on average $21 a day per person. they are struggling to keep their facilities open to be able to provide care to those who have dementia or need hospital-level care or respite and so on, or psychogeriatric care. It is very, very difficult at the moment to actually make that business model work because the funding from Te Whatu Ora is so broken. And it is one of the things that the Australians have done that I think should be part of a best practice model. They have an independent pricing authority. So, and they have set an evidence-based price, and they tell the government what that evidence-based price is. This is the actual cost to look after this individual. And the government pays it. That's the next thing. But also there is transparency there. The revenue stream is split up into three areas: the cost of clinical care, the cost of the accommodation, and the cost of the living expenses, like the food and so on. And I think we need to have that transparency, because New Zealanders have to pay for their care or their accommodation and their living expenses if they can. And then if they can't, the state steps in and tops it up. And so I think we need more transparency around what is it that people are actually paying for and who's paying for what out of that equation.
Well, that makes real sense, and I think that's a very cogent summary of what's needed. The independent pricing seems to be really quite a critical factor, because otherwise you can have bean counters who don't see the value of certain things, or can't see why you can't produce breakfast for $1.50 and not $3.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, that's actually the problem we've got right now. So right now what we've got is a price that is set by Te Whatu Ora. I mean, you really can't use the word negotiate when we're talking about Te Whatu Ora. There is no negotiating going on at the moment. They tell you what they're prepared to pay. Unfortunately, it's not based on anything that we can see or that we can find, and it certainly doesn't cover the costs of providing that the care and accommodation and living expenses that the individual needs to be well looked after holistically for the time that they are in care.
Yeah. It's very disturbing. Once you start looking at this stuff, it's quite chilling.
It's a worry, which is why I guess I'm here, and why I'm making as much noise about it as I can. There are solutions. We can do this as a country. We can look after our seniors. A lot, like I said, over two-thirds of us will stay at home for the rest of our lives, or stay in our rental accommodation, or be able to move into an Abbey Field type environment. But we need to make sure that we build and design something that is sustainable, recognises the actual problem, is evidence-based, and that we are all proud of. And we're up for it. We're just asking the government to be up for it as well.
Yeah. And it does seem to require a long-term commitment. You can't have a commitment to a particular model that's set up, and by the time it's set up, you've got a different government, and that government says, no, we're not going to do it. You've got to have a bipartisan agreement across the parties.
Exactly, which again, I mean, the Australians did that. And so while it was Minister Annika Wells who pulled the task force together, and she chaired the task force, and they had economists in the room and they had Treasury in the room, so that when they had finished their 6 months' worth of work, they had a design and it was funded out. And they, you know, they knew what they could afford, and that's what they put into place. But the members of the sector who were in that task force also went to the opposition and explained it to the opposition. And so they've just passed their, they've passed through that budget, and they've got consistency regardless of what happens after the next election. But the other thing they have, Anne-Marie, that we strongly would advocate for, are advocating for, they have a separate Aged Care Act. It's a rights-based act that clearly sets out what are the services that older people have the right to believe they will receive from their government. And we think that that would be something that New Zealand should do. Strip out the clauses out of the Health and Disability Act, have a separate Aged Care Act, and clearly outline what are the services that will be delivered, must be delivered, to our seniors.
So I'm going to backtrack a little bit here to respond to you on this. It sounds like a really good plan. In terms of the sector, sometimes you get a stage where people are all fed up, no matter whether what part of the sector they're in, and they do beat a unified path, so they get to the point where they're prepared to agree to such a plan. How do you think the voices of the sector are at the moment? Are they on the same page? Are they united? Are they still getting there?
Well, I've been working with a number of CEs from other peak bodies and pulling them together so that we are talking about what are the things that we agree on. And so, like, the CEO of Alzheimer's New Zealand and Hospice New Zealand and the Christian Social Services and the Presbyterian Support Services and CHT and so on, the Nurses Union, the ETU Union, who represents the caregivers, all of those people are now in a group working with me on what we agree on, and so far we agree on two things. We agree that we should have an independent Aged Care Act, and we all agree that we believe we need a ministerial task force that we are part of to design from the ground up, not from Wellington down, but from the ground up, what are the services that are needed for the aged population, and we believe we can take some of the weight off our hospitals if we are allowed to have a ministerial task force and design what is the delivery and funding model for the future.
I think that is brilliant. I think if there's that degree of committed understanding and acceptance of those two crucial aspects that are needed for any meaningful change to happen in the sector, I think if that degree of unity exists from all those different angles of all those different organisations, I think that is a very healthy position to be in. And, you know, just thinking with other coalitions of like minds on other issues, how long it can take for people to get to a point where they can push for a legislative change. I think that this is very good news indeed.
Well, and look, there's less than 98 weeks left before there has to be another election. So, you know, we work as hard as we can with whoever is in government because, you know, under an MMP environment, at the next election, there will be a change to the makeup of government, most likely. It doesn't mean that there'll be a different major party, but generally there is some movement around who are in coalitions with each other. So regardless of who actually ends up in the next government, we need this to be the top issue, one of the top three issues for the 2026 general election. We don't have much time left to actually come up with a proper solution to make sure that we can deliver to our communities. We can already see that Wairoa has no provision. We can see that Reefton has no provision. There are other small towns and communities throughout New Zealand who are just hanging on to the little bit of provision they've got left. And what that means when they lose it is that loved ones get trucked out distances away from their families, from their partners, and from the place that they have known and lived in and worked in.
Yes, I think that that is the crux of it, that there's got to be community by community local pressure put on. But at the same time, there's got to be a national conversation and a plan as well.
That's my goal, Anne Marie. That's what I've got a bit of a plan.
I bet you have. You don't go around vacantly wafting in the breeze. I know you're very organised. I think it's so critical that Australia's moved on this and that we can point to success and that it's been done and it's possible. It's always great to have a vision of where you can go and have tangible examples and evidence that you can trot out. It's much harder to knock that over.
Yes. I mean, it's not a lift and shift from Australia to here. There are some things that they have put into place that one, aren't working out for them, and two, aren't necessarily going to work here in New Zealand. So it's not a lift and shift. But there are a couple of things, like the Independent Pricing Authority, like the Independent Aged Care Act. They are relatively easy to do. They make perfect sense in both nations. And I've even suggested that if we don't want to spend a whole lot of money on making our own independent pricing authority, can we pay the Australian one a little bit of money, give them our information, and get them to actually tell us what is an evidence-based price for home care, residential care, palliative care?
Indeed. Well, I think that's just a fantastic future, really, to have us focus on trying to achieve something of change in that way. And given the fact that we got 660,000 people renting, and they'll be in accommodation that's not necessarily accessible or designed for ageing or for any sensible, low-cost accommodation environment, and that they won't have double-glazed windows and they won't be warm and non-drafty, and you know there's so many different ways you can look at that. So clearly there's a housing conversation, but there's also a workforce shortage, and that's something that we haven't really touched on in this interview so far.
And I mean, from an aged residential care perspective, like, well, at the moment we've got this conversation going on about nurses, and we have got all of these nurses that have just graduated here in New Zealand. Te Whatu Ora, it's funny, isn't it? Apparently there's no hiring freeze for Te Whatu Ora, but they're not hiring these nurses. So
it's very strange.
The aged care. It is strange. I know, I don't understand how those two things go together, but anyway. And they're asking the aged care sector, can you come in and pick up these nurses? Now, we would love to, except that during their training, they actually virtually get no training on what are the specific needs of an aged care facility. And I'm thinking particularly around 89% of all those that are in residential care have some form of cognitive decline. So they're not all diagnosed with dementia. They're not all in secure units, but they do have cognitive decline.
And so I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We're going to have to do another program on this particular topic. But you've opened the can of worms, because literally there's a huge need, but the solutions that government would like to push at the moment are not practical. So thank you for this session, because it's opened a vision for what could happen and how we could be working collectively towards a good future. Thank you very much, Tracy.
Thanks, Emery.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.